All right, welcome in. It's Joel Radio. How you doing out there? This is a, should we call this the special midsummer movie check-in report card? What is it?
Okay, sure.
I don't know. If you want to call it that, we'll just call it Joel Radio, the let me get this in so I can go to the Gathering of the Juggalos and not have to do a show about that version.
Edition. That doesn't really fit on the master.
we'll have to make it. Fit. But Corey's here with me today. We're actually at Corey's place, which is now hosted the third show we've done in this room.
We've done a couple here, yeah.
So a little different. If it sounds a little different, that's why. But we've got the remote equipment, which we use the remote equipment in the studio just a couple weeks ago with Ted Moss. But now we're here with Corey.
They don't need to know that. They'll never know.
They would never know if I didn't let on.
That's
but
right.
Part of it is that because we just went to the theater and saw Dunkirk, so that's on the docket for today. We're going to talk about that. And then we've both seen Spider-Man Homecoming as well.
Yeah.
There's a lot of movies today. I have also seen War for the Planet of the Apes. And you did not, right? You've not seen
Planet
of the Apes. And what other movie stuff have you
seen? I mean, I've seen a lot of movies.
Yeah.
I just didn't see the Planet of the Apes. That's like
the
one.
Planet of the Apes is, well, we'll talk about all these. And
I saw The House.
Oh, Jesus fucking
Christ. Yeah, yeah.
We should open with that. Is there any other business besides movies we should get into? I mean, anything?
Well,
I feel like
there's a little news development.
Which is what?
Orenthal James Simpson was paroled. I mean, I know we could have maybe skipped that whole storyline, but...
Yeah, that happened, and... I was going to talk about how Ed Sheeran went on Game of Thrones. And
that's a hot topic as well.
Mm-hmm. Apparently, I no longer watch Game of Thrones. I watched a few seasons. I'm glad I watched them. I'm glad to know what that is. I feel part of the culture for knowing what Game of Thrones is. But most of the time, I was sort of, I don't know if I would say confused by it, but it was just like, it seemed like more work than it was worth to watch at a certain point. So I stopped.
Well, the nice thing about Game of Thrones is they've killed off so many people that the cast is thinned out.
That's
and it's
true.
There's less factions.
To follow, yeah.
There's less people, the storylines to follow.
They're no longer introducing people because they're killing them.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's that. But here's my feeling. I find it hard to, you know, I feel very bad for the fans of Game of Thrones that feel like their dragon and goblin show has been ruined by an English folk singer. That somehow a ginger-haired teen icon has broken the illusion of reality that the topless lady who commands dragons had for you.
Well, I would say, you know, even more to be... Okay, it is Comic-Con as well.
Oh, so it's Comic-Con week. Yeah.
It is Comic-Con week right now.
We saw the Justice League trailer. I don't think the internet had seen that.
Oh, my God.
Yet, right?
I don't know. Is that the official?
It probably is the debut on Dunkirk.
Okay. All right. And boy, did that stink. the problem with the Justice League trailer, though, is that they're still shooting. Because Zack Snyder had to leave because he had a tragedy that turned out to be very convenient for the rest of us. It was a tragedy for him personally and a victory for America. And then so J.J. Abrams, or I'm sorry, Joss Whedon is stepping in. So he's going to have to really, I mean, is this like an Eric Stoltz situation where you just, in Back to the Future, where you just dump everything that Snyder did?
Entertainment Weekly had an article about, is the era of the director over? Because the big franchises, you know, Marvel has replaced directors. They replaced Edgar Wright on Ant-Man. And, you know, Star Wars replaced those two guys.
Well, they brought in Ron Howard.
Yeah, to replace Phil Lord and the Lego movie
guys. And we'll talk about it in just a minute.
Right, we're going to talk about the MCU here in a minute.
But,
the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
But the age of the director isn't over, but in terms of for those franchise movies?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it is too.
I think the producers,
and you have this... You can't let those guys do whatever they want with these things because you have to set up the next one and the one after that and the one after that. But let's finish on Game of Thrones. I mean, you watch it. was Ed Sheeran, because now Ed Sheeran got upset. Everyone was criticizing him on Twitter. He deleted his Twitter completely.
Yes.
Like, was it that bad? How much screen time was there?
Ed Sheeran had maybe two lines of dialogue. He sang a little bit. So, and this is not a real major spoiler. He's in a small band of Lannister soldiers that are on their way to, you know, some kind of action. Mm-hmm. And, he runs into Arya Stark. So, mild spoiler. Screw you and your spoilers. Watch the show.
It's been on. Yeah. Come on.
Anyway, so he's only in it, and it's like one little scene. Apparently they did it because Maisie Williams, who plays Arya Stark, is a fan of Ed Sheeran, yeah. So they did it as a favor for her.
Sure. And maybe I figure maybe some producer's got a kid who likes, you know, something yes. like that. Yeah, that makes sense.
So, I mean, whatever. It didn't bother me. There was a scene earlier in the movie, in the show, that did bother me. When you talk about the show about dragons and wizards and stuff. And, yeah, there's magic and dragons and guys who can look in the fire and read the future on Game of Thrones. There's all kinds of crap.
There's wolves and guys.
Yeah, dire wolves. And yeah. Your soul can go in the wolf. I'll buy all that.
Yeah.
But they had something that violated the rules of Game of Thrones. And I'm very particular about this stuff. And this will apply to some of the other films we discuss.
Okay.
If you have a reality, set up your reality or whatever your movie world is mm-hmm. and stick to the rules that you set up for that.
Okay.
And in Game of Thrones, there's all this magic, but they have also this makeup technology.
Okay.
Where people can pose as other people through makeup.
Like makeup like we would know makeup, or they have some magic makeup?
Like Arya Stark went and spent a whole season apprenticing with the Faceless Ones, who are this sect of crazy mm-hmm. religious people who make masks. They're assassins, and they make these mm-hmm. elaborate masks, and they cast them. This is a world that doesn't have gunpowder or electricity or circuitry or plastics or, I don't know, soldering. And they're going to make, she literally goes and puts a mask on and fakes the voice flawlessly.
Okay.
Like she's the T-1000.
Yeah.
Right. And then she pulls the mask off like Mission Impossible,
oh.
Scooby-Doo style. And it's like that I draw the line at.
Well, look, I mean, look, granted, it's a fantasy show. You know you're in there. But my feeling is, you know, one of the problems with shows that last a long time and get popular is that every celebrity wants to be on them.
Mm-hmm.
And the producers have to fight the instinct to put these guys in as on cameos, or they just do it. Some shows do it well. I mean, I remember The Office and Will Ferrell coming on there. And, mm-hmm. you know, people want to get on these shows.
The show that did it really well was The Good Wife.
Okay.
Because that's like case of the week.
Okay.
So
yeah.
guys could come in right. and do their spot
but
as a
Friends
attorney.
At the end was having all kinds of cameos of people.
Oh God, we
had
were
no business being on that.
There was friend. We saw a couple minutes of Friends last night, and I forgot that Friends is part of that. They are in a shared universe with Mad About You.
Oh jeez. Were they was yes. did Helen Hunt show up or
Helen
something?
Helen Hunt
or?
Came in and did a cameo.
Oh my goodness.
Because you see, Phoebe has a twin sister, Ursula.
Right, and she was on Mad About You.
Yes. Yeah. So there was a crossover.
Yeah.
And I like crossovers. I'm all for that.
Okay, but I mean I just think that when it's a celebrity doing these.
Well, you know, it starts with Batman was the show where everybody in the 60s wanted to.
Right, yeah.
And they even built that into, I mean, no one took Batman seriously. It was a comedy anyway. So, you know, Sammy Davis Jr. would pop out the window and do a little bit. So this is all in that tradition. I'm not mad at Ed Sheeran for that. I'm mad
no,
at Ed Sheeran for his sissy-ass music.
Well,
oh, my God.
You can't help that. But I think I just see, like, Glow, like, just as an example of a show. How many guys are going to try to get on Glow in the next year? How many
cameos? Oh, next
year.
Well, there were a couple wrestlers that were in there.
But you didn't know. I mean, you and I knew, or I knew him for sure. But
yeah, there was a couple Ring of Honor guys.
Chris Daniels was on there.
Sure.
Who we saw at Ring of Honor and stuff.
The Fallen Angel, yes.
It's just, they're going to do that. That's clearly going that way, where they're going to just start throwing on people.
Whatever, guys. It's show business.
I mean, isn't Brooke Hogan's in Glow for a second.
Oh, jeez. I didn't get to that episode.
Oh, you didn't finish Glow?
I still haven't seen the last two. It was fine. But yeah.
Glow was good. But yeah, so Ed Sheeran, everyone's up in arms about. And I'm like, well, you know, it's Game of Thrones. It's like season 7 now or something. Like, it's long in the tooth, that show.
Yeah,
what you initially liked about it probably isn't even on there anymore.
No,
anyway,
I said, they've killed everybody off, so you know, the plots are getting a lot simpler. They've thinned the herds.
It's rare for me to say I've seen every single one of anything, because inevitably my interest does fade, and I feel like, you know, I don't want to watch a show that I really like suck.
But you have no. But see, there's now peer pressure that you have to watch.
Well, I don't give it.
You have to be completely up to date. Well, I was watching it. There was a Comic-Con panel on TV last night.
Okay.
And Adam Savage was on it, and they asked about Game of Thrones, and he's like, "Well, I'm not caught up on Game of Thrones."
Oh.
You know, like, which is a reasonable thing for a person, you know, who's busy.
Sure.
You know, Adam's got his own career and things going on. To not have consumed every piece of media, and the crowd went, "Ooh!" Like, you're not caught up on Game. Like, I don't. And he didn't say where he was on Game of Thrones, but he didn't say I'd never watched it.
Yeah.
He just said I'm not caught up, which means because
it's a way to say you don't watch it, though. Too. it's a way to say you watched it once and you thought it fucking sucked. I don't think Game of Thrones ever. I mean, if you watched it when it came out,
and I don't think that's what Adam was implying. I think he meant that he just wasn't. You know, current with the new season, which just started, but that's, you got to do that now or else you're shunned.
Well, I'm fine being shunned. Please,
you're
shun
unclean.
Me. Please.
They run you out in the cornfield.
Please do that. I know a guy who was talking to me, and he goes, "Yeah, I just started Walking Dead, like season 1, episode 1. And he's been watching it, and he's like, "Oh, it's great." And I go, "Well, there's a point when it's not great." And he goes, "Oh." He goes, "Well, I'm watching season 2, and everyone said that sucked, and that was pretty good." And I'm like, well, you didn't watch it 1 week at a time.
Yes.
With 6 days in between to talk about how bad it sucked on the internet. That they never left the farm. And I wish I had the article. There's a big lawsuit between those guys now.
Frank Darabont.
Frank Darabont and Robert Kirkman's production company and AMC and all these people. Because Frank Darabont was angry that they cut the budget. And part of that was that they had to keep people on the farm. And Frank Darabont went on and on about... the cameramen were terrible, and it was pretty entertaining. I like that.
I mean, the show changed tones, though.
Yeah.
I mean, from when Frank Darabont was the showrunner to later seasons, it's changed tone.
Yeah.
That show, I hate watch that. That thing is...
Still?
Yeah,
are you saying... Wait a minute. Are you up to date on Game of Thrones, Corey?
Except that I skipped, like, 3/4 of a season.
Oh,
because,
okay.
Like, I had had a point in last year... When I went, nope, not doing it.
Okay.
This is dumb.
Yeah.
It's a waste of my time.
Hmm.
And I just quit the show.
How many original, I mean, I guess this is not a spoiler. How many characters from season 1 are still on Walking Dead?
Three?
Okay.
Four, maybe?
I would have guessed probably, yeah, I guess 3. And I don't want to see.
Maggie.
We don't have to go. I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be the guy somebody turns off the podcast.
All right.
Because somebody turned off the podcast because I was talking about Alison Brie's tits. So letting you know.
Now, who is that?
It's not important. But anyway.
I have a feeling I know who it is.
But anyway.
Let me guess.
I didn't want to ruin.
Did this person have breasts of their own?
Yeah.
Yeah. They'd never heard. Hold on. Speaking of catching up and being up to date. Person had never heard.
Yeah?
A previous episode of this program?
Yeah, no, you know,
the
maybe
decade
not.
Long
I actually
of this
know that I don't know, but so yeah, I mean, Walking Dead. Here's when I got out of Walking Dead. I guess I'm free to talk about this because it's not current. But the governor is the guy that is every apocalyptic thing. It's like my feeling is the trope with any sort of storyline that has that, and Planet of the Apes has that too, and we'll get to that is. The enemy is no longer the enemy that you know. It's the humans have all turned on each other.
Yes.
And there's the king and everyone, the dictator. And that guy is played out in every... And every single show does that.
Mm-hmm.
Every single show does that. And that guy just, you know, he... In wrestling terminology, it was go-away heat. I know this guy's the villain, and I want to see him get his, but I also don't want to watch this person on the show.
Yeah.
This person is ruining the show.
To the point where, like, fans in the Mid-South Coliseum are going to climb over the barricades to stab him.
No, no, no. That's good heat.
Oh, okay.
Go away heat means...
everybody hates him. Roman Reigns.
I don't want to watch this.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, your heel, I do not want to watch... It was sort of like the NWO at the end. Where,
like,
it was,
yeah,
it was go away heat, meaning they were just ruining... And in the beginning, they were invading
Nitro,
and it was fun.
Nobody wanted to watch 20 minutes of Kevin Nash talking, and then they squashed somebody.
When the NWO was Conan and Kurt Hennig and Scott Norton, it was like, we don't want to watch these guys. And that's what I mean by it's go-away heat. And that's what I meant by the governor was, yeah, you're there, and you're the foil for these characters, but you're also... I don't want to watch this character.
Well, now
I liked when it was humans against zombies.
Well, now it's
humans.
Now
against,
it's Negan.
Well, whatever.
Who is
exactly
the polarizing figure?
And I don't like that when they do these end of the world shows.
And
you got zombies to fight. I know they're boring, and I know you can only do so much with them. But
I would say, aside from the Mad Max movies, the apocalypse genre is not a particular favorite of mine.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good origin story, I think. The end of the world.
Yeah, see,
it makes a good origin story. Can you sustain 8 seasons of that? No, I think
it's very evident that my fat bookish ass is not going to survive the apocalypse. Unless I'm the guy that's like, I think we need to water the crops with
the
water.
Governor. I think you're the
yeah, right. I need to right.
You can seize power at a point.
I need to be. You and I would either be the smart guys that figure out. We're like. Well, guys, the gasoline engine's going to seize up. If you know,
we're the guys that the rednecks kill to take over. Power.
Yeah, I don't think I'm surviving the apocalypse, so it's no concern of mine.
I haven't seen an apocalypse that I really want to be part of, though. Yet,
no,
either.
No, there. It's never like
culture.
It's never good.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen one. I'm trying to think of the apocalypse type shows, but.
Look, I get a little itchy when I feel like I've gotten to the end of my Netflix queue.
Yeah.
I don't imagine the apocalypse and there's nothing new coming out. My God.
So anyway, the Game of Thrones is it comes back to controversy right away.
Well, not only that, Game of Thrones.
And he's going to be on more episodes, you think?
No, he had a minor role. It wasn't like.
Oh.
No.
Well, Harry Styles is in Dunkirk. I don't know how much that. Did you know that was him?
No.
Okay, you don't all right, know. What all right. Direction.
I know Ed Sheeran.
Yes.
On site, and his wimpy. I want to love the shape of your body.
Yeah.
It just all sounds like a 12-year-old who's never boned a chick. I know him. Harry Styles, I wouldn't know from Adam, and I know he does a bunch of cameos and crap.
Well, he has a. If anyone is a, I would say he is a second, you know, he's not second lead, but Dunkirk is an ensemble. He is part of the ensemble. He has plenty of lines. The thing about Harry Styles is at least he fits in. He's not, doesn't look like a ginger, you know, dough or something. You know, he doesn't stand out like Sheeran does.
You're feeling Sheeran doesn't really scare you as a soldier?
Yeah, no, and even in the world of pixies and elves and monsters, Ed Sheeran still looks like a fucking creepazoid.
You know, this is the world that we live in now in 2017, which in many ways is great, wonderful. Digital technology is incredible.
Yeah.
It also sucks real big dong. In that there's controversy before there's even a show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So did you know the creators, not the creators, because that's George R. R. Martin, but the showrunners of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Who are David Benioff and D.B. Weiss.
Okay.
And I think one of them is married to Amanda Peet.
Oh.
So good job on him. I mean, that's a crazy chick, though. That's...
Yeah, well, that's a lot of work.
That's
a lot of work.
Yeah, speaking of heat. But, yeah, they're already lined up their next show for HBO.
And what is that going to be about?
That show is called Confederate.
All right.
In which the South won the war.
Oh.
And, they successfully seceded.
An alternate history.
So there's now a USA and a Confederate States.
Yeah.
Much like they did with Man in the High Castle. I mean...
Sure, Man in the High Castle does that.
So...
But they need to let that come out. I mean, yeah, if you're going to be mad at this thing...
But people are mad at it already.
But isn't there source material for this, or is it an original story?
I think it's an original story, except how original is that? We've seen that premise. Like, we've seen the South Wins the War premise done in many times, you know?
Westworld. We're gonna talk about all the shows today.
You better have an HBO Go pass.
Westworld had all kinds of controversy about its budget and the amount of sex in it. And that thing came out and people liked it. And it was good and it was a big hit for them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think a lot of it is bullshit. I think there's always a little smoke, but then when you're writing an article about it, you need to make it a big deal. Meaning no one's going to read the article about the little deal. People only want the headline about the big deal, you know. And when you talked about Confederate, and I go, oh, yeah, I read a headline about Confederate. Didn't read the article. So,
well,
I mean, that's why they write those.
But that's, I mean, there's been, we've covered this premise many times. Yeah. There's been speculative fiction or whatever. That's a real popular alternate history story. There was a comic book called Captain Confederacy.
Yeah.
Where it had like a kind of a Captain America for the South.
Mm-hmm.
This stuff, that's not a new idea.
Yeah.
So but people act like, wait, like they just came up with that?
I think like, people are mad because it's not politically correct.
Well,
right?
They're saying it's you know, kind of in a certain way.
Right.
You're and then some criticism of Man in the High Castle was directed this way, but not a lot. But
yeah,
because clearly we know who the bad guys are in that show.
It's
that you're celebrating Nazism or you're celebrating you're secretly kind of okay with slavery, mm-hmm. and you want to see it. Like, yeah. I mean, Jeff Sessions probably would turn into the show and be like, "Now I want to see how this works."
Well, I mean,
seems like a good program.
Are there still concentration camps on Man in the High Castle?
No, they've exterminated.
Oh, the Jews are gone. Okay,
I mean, like,
but in
and they make like references to. I mean, if there are, they're undercover.
Are there going to be like slaves on this Confederacy show? I mean, that's what people are assuming, I'm guessing.
Well, slavery is legal in the Confederacy in this premise.
But I'm guessing part of that is that this is how this new Confederacy ends, though, too.
No,
that there is
of course.
About the slaves will rise up. And
now, I've watched both seasons of Man in the High Castle. I think it's a pretty well done show. Sometimes they get much like every show now. Every one of these cable series, the dramas, they get padded out. Walking Dead is the most egregious of those. Where Man in the High Castle, though, will just slow the plot down and pad things out to extend the, you know.
Yeah.
And then you'll get side characters that you don't really
the
care about.
Episode.
Yeah.
I don't watch that show.
They'll get, they're in trouble with the Yakuza, and that plot will take four or five episodes away from the main plot. You know. But anyway, the padding aside, I think Man in the High Castle is pretty well done, and the world building that they've done is clever.
Yeah.
So I'd be willing to watch the Confederate show. I don't see a problem with that. I would find it could be interesting. But I also get the people that say, I get a little tired of every year there's a slave movie.
Yeah.
And I understand people who don't want to watch that anymore.
Yeah.
I get it. You know, like it is a little tawdry to be kind of, it's like slave porn,
sure,
where you're kind of,
well, that
luxuriating
Birth of a Nation, which
was very much like that.
I mean, and you know, 12 Years a Slave and
well,
Birth
it was
of a Nation
the
were both
well, Birth of a Nation
turned
was
me
the,
off.
It was the angrier,
yeah.
It was like the angry refutation of 12 Years a Slave, but neither one of those are like movies I'm going to go.
No,
but look, there's Holocaust movies every year.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not exactly fun. Yeah. Whatever. Maybe they're necessary. Maybe not. Maybe people are upset that they're doing a fantasy kind of show where it makes it fun and sexy.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. But
I don't
want to watch Handmaid's Tale for that reason.
No, I stopped with that. That was completely no fun.
Because that's
the end of fun.
That's like, right? Doesn't that show just seems like a bummer from
it was not
I read
fun.
The book.
Yeah. Oh, I saw the 89 movie or whatever.
Okay, yeah, I read the book like in high school and I went, this is no fun.
Yeah.
This is a bummer and
yeah.
it's like a religious theocratic oppressive society.
And I liked that movie, but that movie ended in an hour and a half or 2 hours. And
so we don't like apocalypse and dystopias. All right, good
Well,
talk.
Let's talk about Dunkirk because I don't wanna I know Spider-Man's going to take up so much time, so stay tuned for goddamn Spider-Man.
All right.
Corey and I, we've only talked about Spider-Man having me seen it and not you. So I have
this is what happens.
But I want to get into Dunkirk.
Joel and I will call each other to be like, what do you want to talk about on the show this week?
Yeah.
Or whatever. Maybe I'll call. And then we start realizing we're doing the podcast.
Yeah, and then we have to shut up.
Yeah.
So
we decided to record, instead of talking to each other in real life, we decided to record these things for God knows what reason.
So we'll have them forever.
Yeah.
So Dunkirk we went to today. It was opening day Friday here as we're recording this. Now, part of the thing about Dunkirk was it was getting critically, and I like Chris Nolan. I think he's one of the, better guys around. And when you talk about, the age of director being over and that stuff, Chris Nolan spits in the face of that because he is the guy that gets stuff his way. And even in Dunkirk, there's things where it's like, yeah, no one would have done it like that, and he did it this way, and I enjoy those things. But one of the things about it, it was getting all these critical...
It's got a 92 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Well, there you go. It's doing quite well.
89 user score.
But part of it is, he's so old school, this Chris Nolan, that he's got to shoot on film, and he is going to roll out special projection, and you need to see Dunkirk in a special format, or you're losing so much. So, Corey, I'm going to describe this as me dragging you to this presentation of Dunkirk.
You laid out. So, in a very Joelish way, because you're a resolution queen.
that's not even a term.
I know.
A term for anything.
But you are very but you're a first adopter of tech. You're
right.
Always kind of like. You got rid of a perfectly good television so that you could get a 4K HD Ultra one. You know what I mean? You upgrade things all the time, and you're a little bit more focused on the newest and latest. So for you, the technical specs of the Christopher Nolan, along with a handful of other directors, is insistent on keeping film stock alive.
Yes.
They believe that film stock, and specifically 70mm film stock, which is what Hollywood came up with to counter movies.
Yes.
They decided.
It's ironic,
yes. In the 50s, they said, what do we do to get people to come to the theater? So let's make movies bigger and wider.
Yeah.
So they came out with a CinemaScope 70mm Cinerama presentation. You went to the Arclight. Did you go to the Arclight?
I didn't.
Okay.
Well, I went to that 40X theater. That's what the newest technology.
Well, the Cinerama Dome in LA is still there, the Arclight theater, which is a great theater. But anyway. They were like, how do we make the presentation as great as? So instead of the 35mm film stock, they went up to 70mm. So you get a better image. Yes. You get more detail, more resolution. I couldn't tell the difference between this and digital.
So basically, Chris Nolan shot some of this movie. He shot the entire movie on something other than digital and something other than 35mm. He shot it on IMAX film, which is 70mm film, but it runs the other way. It runs horizontally. If that makes sense to you, instead of vertically through the screen. So you get that's the largest image you can get, and it has a 1.4:1 aspect ratio, meaning it is 1.4 times as wide as it is high, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And a normal movie is 1.85, meaning it's 1.85:1. If your TV screen in HD is 1.7.
I so wish I had that computer readout sound effect.
Well, you don't, so fuck you. Yeah. And then a widescreen movie, like a Panavision CinemaScope type movie, is about 2.2:1. So he shot this movie, Dunkirk, in IMAX and 70mm and then edited them together. You can see this in IMAX film, Corey.
Yeah.
In about 30 theaters in 16 different states in the United States. So when I was going to see Dunkirk, I'm on the phone with Corey going, well, I'm going to find out who's showing it this way, and we're going to go there. And then I go to the Dunkirk movie website. I go to some other websites to read about, some sort of tech blogs and that. Turns out, no IMAX film presentation in the state of Michigan for this movie. So that's out. So the best way of seeing it is out the window. And I go, all right, well, let's just see what the other options are. And then I find out. It is okay. Please stop with that. You're annoying. That sounds like a bird. What is that?
It's the Star Trek computer.
So then I find out. I could just unplug your mic. I don't have the board to turn you down, but
you
I can
just
unplug the guy.
Oh.
So then I find out, well, they have 70mm film.
Yeah.
Well, let's find out where that's showing. The 70mm, not the IMAX film, 70mm film. So vertically running through the projector. Where can I see that? I can see that at two theaters in Metro Detroit.
Ooh.
And then I go, well, what about just seeing
it? Well, because the theater we went to has a pseudo IMAX.
Well, that's what I'm going to get to next.
Yeah.
I thought about, well, we'll see it at the big digital place where we saw
Star
Wars.
Well, the one real IMAX theater in Metro Detroit
is
at the Henry Ford Museum.
Yes.
And they have, for some reason, stopped showing commercial films.
Yeah, that's weird.
For a few years, they did have all the
Transformers there.
I saw The Dark Knight there, which was another Christopher Nolan movie. And
he shot some of that on IMAX.
Yeah, all of the, not even the whole movie.
Just parts. Dunkirk was
in
parts,
fact,
yeah.
it would expand out to bigger
So I said, let's just go to the big digital screen around the corner from you. Which is where we saw Star Wars Force Awakens. We did the podcast.
Did not have it in 70mm.
And they didn't have, but they had a big digital. And then I'm reading this thing.
But
this is what I want to
theater, that theater has been built in the last 3 years.
Yeah, it has no
so
film.
It doesn't have a film projector.
Well, that would be considered the digital cinema projection, DCP. 2.2 aspect ratio and either a 2K or 4K resolution. To see it in 70mm, which is where we would have to drive an extra 15 minutes for basically the same price, we would be seeing it in a 2.2, so same aspect ratio, but a digital equivalent of 12 or 13K.
Mm-hmm.
So my feeling is, well, we're getting four times the Ks. Four times the Ks. Let's go.
Yeah.
So Corey and I went. Now, here's the thing. One good thing about 70mm... is that apparently they can't pad all of that digital bullshit in front of the movie like they normally do.
Yeah.
So we showed up pretty much right at showtime. We saw two trailers for Blade Runner.
That's one thing about
Justice League.
You have to actually attach the trailers to the film.
To the film, yeah.
On physical film stuff.
And it's pretty clear that Warner Brothers put two 70mm trailers on the front of this, and I think Justice League no one's seen yet on the web, so maybe they have. You can probably see it now, but I hadn't seen it, and I'd seen every. I've been to the movie so much in the last month, I've seen every trailer.
Right.
So we got to see 70mm trailers, and it was like, okay. I mean, Justice League was stupid, and I agree with you, but okay. So you saw two trailers, and then the movie comes on. And then I'm like, okay. But here's the thing that I
noticed. That Blade Runner movie looks kind of cool.
But it's also, who cares that that's Blade
Runner?
Well,
okay, Blade Runner is, again, a movie that no one has a... There's a... People admire it, but I don't know anybody who loves it.
No.
Is there, like, any real
fan? No, there's guys that know it, and they're in their basement right now, jerking off to...
Yeah, anime. Whereas Justice League, there are people that passionately love it, and I used to be one of them, but that doesn't look like...
Well,
I can't get past the costumes. They're so busy.
Yeah.
Like, the whole thing about comic books is... You're supposed to be, okay, that guy's orange and green, that's Aquaman. You're supposed to be simplified, and you can recognize their silhouette and their profile. And this shit, Jason Momoa's wearing, you know what I mean? Like, it's like armor
scales,
with, like, scales on it, and barnacles, you know, seaweed hanging out. I'm just like, why?
It's a lot.
I get that he comes out of the water.
Well, look, do you want to go DCU versus Marvel Universe, or can I talk about Dunkirk?
No, get back to Dunkirk.
The Dunkirk, because we're running. We're going to run out. I know. People think we're going to... I'm going to say we're running out of time only because I got shit to do tonight.
Exactly.
And you don't.
So do I. I'm doing stand-up.
But it's... Let's get to Dunkirk, because there's a lot to talk about. So I noticed that, to me... Now, I was a trained movie theater projectionist, 35mm film, the whole thing. With a film, any film, 35 or 70mm running through a projector, and I've seen, like, old movies in 70mm, like, I'll go to the Michigan, and I saw 2001, and I think I saw The Wild Bunch in 70mm and stuff later, and I saw lots of stuff in the 80s in 70mm, because they would release Superman and Star Wars and all that stuff in 70, so I'd seen 70 over the years, but anything running vertically, when you look at, like, a sky... Say, the blue will seem a little blotchy or a little streaky because you can see where the film is moving. It's a persistence of vision thing, and some people can see it more than others, but I can see film. So when I see something digital, it looks very clean to my eye. Whereas with film, I am seeing striations.
Sure.
Did you see any splices? I saw a couple. If you see, yeah, I know what to look for when I see.
Yeah,
his splice,
I didn't see. Much, I mean, obviously that print was fresh.
Yeah, so that's
so
another thing.
So we were seeing it the first time it goes through the projector,
yeah,
right?
Or the second, yeah.
Whatever. I mean, yeah, they test screened.
They probably tested. It might have been at 10 a.m. at that too. I don't know. But
Yeah. So we had only, you know, that print was new.
So yeah,
I saw maybe like two little white blips. I didn't even notice. So normally when you have to switch reels.
Yes.
There's like a little indication will pop up.
It's a hole. Yeah.
There's a hole, black or hole. Even there used to be even like they draw one.
Yeah.
Or like for sure. Which order
which
the reels were in,
it is, yeah.
And it'll see like for 1/10 of a second you'll mm-hmm. see the thing pop up. I didn't even see those.
Yeah, it was pretty good that way. I did see a couple of splices, but splices I believe are about every 20 minutes, so there would have been 7 or 8 in this, and we didn't see that. I didn't see that many, so that was good. But yeah, I did notice it was film. I mean, I noticed it was film to my eye. Now, did it look good? Yeah, it looked great. I mean, it was colorful. There was a lot of detail. I mean, Chris Nolan.
Well,
the
movie itself isn't actually colorful. It's a lot of
blue
and it's dark and.
But I mean, it was the colors were well saturated.
Yeah,
it was a nice looking movie. Here's my feeling for you at home, the listener. Find out where these theaters are. Go to the Dunkirk official movie site and look it up. If you don't have one of those, I wouldn't go long out of your way to see the 70mm. Because I think if you have a big digital screen that looks nice, just go see that. Mm-hmm. Because here's the thing about digital. In film, and this is true about analog music versus digital too, is that there is generational loss. Meaning, he shot this on film, they printed it to a master, which is a copy of the original, then they print the film reels that you see in the theater from that. So you're seeing three copies. The digital can be made from the original, so now you don't have that generational loss. So a lot of times when you listen to music that is digital remastered, they go right to the source tapes, and so you're not getting that extra copy of the analog mix. I know, nerdy, but stay with me. So to me, I think had we gone to the big giant digital screen around the corner from your house, I think we would have been very happy, and it would have looked
similar experience.
But at the same time, nothing really detracted me from this 70mm presentation, and I'm glad I saw it.
But again, when you see a brand new print,
yeah, that's true.
You're not getting the pops and clicks and whistles, which is what I don't care for that in film.
Yes.
And I understand why guys like it on vinyl. That's part of the whole process. Yeah. You hear the needle drop, you hear a little crackle, you can hear some, you know. Yeah. In film, I don't really want that.
Anything distracting, you shouldn't have.
I've seen plenty of dirty prints of things that, you know, because it used to be the old. Now, this is also hurting in that some stuff has not been converted to digital.
You mean like movies?
Yes, like older movies have not been.
Right, yeah.
They get maybe put on Blu-ray. Some aren't even on Blu-ray.
But they usually do restoration. Some better than others.
But it used to be that you were watching these old prints, particularly for like Godzilla movies and things.
Well, the television prints are notorious.
Right.
Because what they would do for television is what they used to do in the 70s and stuff is they'd send the movie on like a film. And when you were watching a movie on television, a lot of times you were just seeing like a copy of a 16mm. So they were duping the 35 to 16, sending it to a place who was then making a videotape copy of it.
Well, yeah, and in the 90s, when John Tenney had his Japanese coffee shop toy store, we did like a night. We did like a movie night at the Magic Bag.
Okay.
And we got these prints in, and I think we showed three movies, but the middle one looked just terrible. It was,
were you getting 16 or 35? You don't even know.
I think they were 16.
Yeah.
But they were Godzilla movies.
Yeah. Exactly.
And, but those were like still in circulation and playing at like, repo houses and midnight movies and stuff. And you'd get these prints and it was Godzilla versus the Astro Monster. Yeah. Horrible. It just looked like it had been dragged on the floor.
In college.
And midnight movies used to be like that.
Yeah, yeah. We would watch. We had a 16mm screen. At NYU, the lecture hall was also a 16mm projection room.
Mm-hmm.
And NYU was where Martin Scorsese, they housed Martin Scorsese's 16mm film collection. So Martin Scorsese, before DVD and stuff, when he wanted a movie, he would buy a 16-millimeter print and store it at NYU in their storage facilities, and we had access to those. So I saw his personal 16-millimeter print of Taxi Driver at NYU. Talk about nerdy.
Well, but that's how, yeah, and there'd always be like, there's a new print.
But the film guys would want to see those versus the VHS. When it was VHS versus 16-millimeter, I was like, 16-millimeter, 16-millimeter, blah, blah, blah. You know, so this has been going on for years. Yeah, please don't take that call. but 16-millimeter was, you know. So anyway, my feeling on this is we are better for having gone digital in the cinema. I believe that, truly.
I do, too.
So I disagree with Chris Nolan. I think shooting on IMAX and 70 is some benefit to that, because some digital camera standards are not good. You know that, like, Star Wars Episode II. Well, I think the first was the first digitally shot live-action movie, complete all the way through. And that was shot on a film format that has less resolution than a Blu-ray disc, believe it or not.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like the technology is moving so quickly that, you know, yeah, at the time, film beat the shit out of that, but Lucas did it because he wanted to do the effects, and he didn't want to have a step to convert the digital things. So anyway, Dunkirk looks great. It looks great.
So you're saying that the Phantom Menace, or not the Phantom Menace, but the Phantom Menace was on film.
Was on film, yes. But, and then they converted it to digital.
Attack of the Clones.
Attack of the Clones was shot with digital cameras.
Yeah, and I remember when they initially started making the conversion to digital.
That was
because,
the movie.
Because
too.
Yeah, but theaters didn't have digital projectors for a while.
Yeah. You sometimes you got it, sometimes you didn't. Or they'd have one or two of them.
And when they started rolling out the digital projectors, I really do distinctly remember feeling it was weird at first.
Yeah.
That the images were too bright or too... just didn't look weird. Now, I am completely accustomed to
it.
I don't think it makes a difference at all.
Yeah.
You know, this stuff, this tech wizard stuff.
Well, it's... Well, go ahead.
I feel like I'm an intuitive guy. Like, obviously, I got shelves full of movies full of science fiction special effects, and I like old monster movies where they built the tanks and the bridges that the rubber suited monster guy stomps over. So I like that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
But I don't get too fired up for technical specs. This to me is like, well, Christopher Nolan makes Rush movies, like the band Rush.
Yeah.
They're appreciated by only him.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, the drummers who sit there and wonk out about how many toms Neil Peart's got on his kit. Like, I never liked those guys. I never liked that music. And there's a degree of, I don't give a shit about your technical mastery.
But I think, here's the thing. There was a point when you needed to care, because you were seeing, and Dunkirk has made that again, where you need to decide. My feeling is, don't worry about it. I think for you, I think this is your thing. I'm going to sum up your attitude towards it is, you guys figure it out and show it to me and make it look good and you're happy.
Yeah.
And you know what? And that's not a bad attitude to have. And the good thing is, we've gotten to a point where wherever you see Dunkirk, it will look good. I think I'm safe in saying that, having seen this episode.
But oftentimes, much like you and I can get into the minutia of comedy.
Yeah.
Oftentimes the filmmakers, like Peter Jackson with that, with The Hobbit, with the
3D 60 frame per
60
second,
frame per second issue. Yeah. And everybody else looked at that and went, this looks weird.
Or 48 frames or whatever. It was the double frame rate thing, yes.
The extra frame rate.
Yes.
And everybody,
I went to all of those in that extra frame rate.
And you know what? Most people didn't like it.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Filmmakers are ahead of us.
Yes.
In terms of, and so I feel like
me and John Tenney were interviewed for the Detroit Free Press about.
Oh, were you?
The high frame rate.
Yeah.
Neil Rubin interviewed us.
Well, but it's just, feels like it's, I feel like Nolan and Peter Jackson they have had massive success in the movies, have ungodly amounts of money. There's only so many BJs you can get. So they have to have something to worry about and be obsessed over.
I think those guys worry because they know that in the past things haven't looked good and you needed to have a certain standard of quality. My feeling is that standard is now the default. And so since that standard's the default, it's not really worth worrying about.
I will say one definite problem if we were talking long term.
Yeah.
We haven't even talked about the movie.
We got to, because we're running. All right. I mean, we're.
But is that formats change, like you said.
Yeah.
Digital formats can. There's a lot of concern that digital formats are going to start to erode I haven't really seen evidence of it yet, but there's laser rot. And
well,
things
there's
and,
those things. I mean, the masters should be protected.
Or that in the future we're
going to
have different systems that won't recognize.
Yeah.
And film is eternal and physical, and you can always, you know, see it.
Yeah.
But who knows?
Well, again, look, Dunkirk is a movie that, you know, you want that to look good. You want it to sound good. It sounded great. It looked great to me. I was fine with that. So let's move on to the actual film.
The film itself, yes.
Which has been getting raves. And look, I'm there was a point in Dunkirk when I went like, yeah, I see why they're going to give this every Oscar. But then at the same time, did I think this was the greatest movie I've ever seen? No. Did I think this was the greatest war movie I ever saw? No. I liked it. I thought it was well done. I think there are Christopher Nolan-y things that are in here, which we can get to, which make it his movie. Look, I feel like Spielberg could have made this movie, but then Nolan put his twist on it. You know what I mean? This could have been made by... You know, like Hacksaw Ridge was probably the last.
There's a massive difference as if Spielberg had made this.
Yeah, exactly.
It would have had a heart.
Yes. Well, it has heart. No, this movie does have heart.
Yes, but it's heart. Like you said, it's heart. It's a third copy of a heart.
Well,
it's heart that was shot on 70mm, then run through a projector. You know what I mean? We're not getting the IMAX heart experience.
My feeling is that. All of the stuff that you want.
What are the names of the two lead characters that we follow?
I don't know what their goddamn name is. Well, I've seen that in reviews. Okay, not only do I not know the names of these fucking people, Tom Hardy doesn't speak a fucking word of English that I understood once in this movie. Not a syllable of Tom Hardy was understood.
Tom Hardy's got a thick Mancunian northern accent.
Right.
I could follow his accent, but he's in a fighter pilot, and he's wearing... Okay.
He's wearing fucking Bane mask for the whole movie.
There's an initial shot of Tom Hardy where he's not wearing the mask.
Yeah.
And then they're like, well, we're getting ready
they
for our attack
run. That's Tom Hardy.
We're getting ready to go for an attack run.
Yeah.
And he, like, puts the mask on, and then he talks to, you know, look to the left, there's a fighter they're coming in. And, like, you just hear him do that, and then you don't see his goddamn face.
Yeah, you never... It's...
Tom Hardy shot how many weeks in a cockpit doing one eye?
Yeah.
Like, that's a waste of time visually to me. Any shot of Tom Hardy in the cockpit with a mask on where you can't see it, you know what I mean?
No, like, I thought that, the dialogue in that, you don't need to understand it, I guess, at a certain point. I thought that scene of the guys in the boat, I don't want to ruin it, the scene of the guys in the boat, it's the whole movie. But, you know, there are points when you do need to understand the dialogue. And I think it's clear then. But there's lots of guys talking with their back turned to the camera. There's lots of guys yelling over their shoulder.
What is Tom Hardy's character's name?
I don't know any. I don't know one. I don't. And it's fine. I'm
Farrier,
fine.
Apparently.
I'm fine.
But they're anonymous.
But that's...
So, all right. Okay. Should we back up a little bit? Dunkirk is the story of initially in 1940, the British Expedition Force... And the French and whatever other allied armies were with, I think the Belgians or whatever, got pushed off the continent after the initial, they were not prepared for there was what they called the phony war for a while where they sort of just stood their ground and waited for the Germans. Mm-hmm. Then the Germans invaded Poland and blitzkrieged and they were not prepared for it and got wiped out and had to evacuate.
Right. It's reverse D-Day, basically.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Instead of and then so their D-Day is when
the boats came.
They came
and
back.
They invaded.
Yes.
Yeah. D-Day.
This is they got the whole British Expeditionary Force got pushed off the continent.
It's the prequel to Saving
at Dunkirk, right?
I mean, did you like the movie?
And Dunkirk has a much more significance. Americans don't know what that is.
No, it's a British.
It's
thing.
A much more and there's been movies about Dunkirk before, British movies. In fact, the movie Their Finest, which was a pretty good movie that came out. Earlier in the winter, or spring, they're making a movie about Dunkirk in it. It's like they're making the propaganda movies during the war, and the movie within the movie is all like, girls and their dog on a boat, a fishing boat, going to raid. We got to rescue our boys, and you know, like that kind of stuff.
Sure. Yeah.
So there is a real patriotic appeal. To the British about Dunkirk. Mm-hmm. Everybody else looks at it and goes, oh, well, that was a real...
right.
That was a real cock-up, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They barely survived. I mean, the British, entire British army almost got wiped out trying to get off the island to go back home.
Yeah.
Or get off at French coast.
Yes.
Calais and Dunkirk.
Dunkirk's in France.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, to me, it's the most British movie you could make.
Yeah.
It's like, well, we almost lost.
Yeah.
Well, that was quite embarrassing, wasn't it? We almost got our asses kicked. And then even the soldiers in the movie are kind of like, how are they going to perceive us when we get home? They,
well, that's
they feel like they're failures.
Spoilers.
Well, it's not a spoiler.
Yeah, it's not a spoiler.
It's a theme in the
movie. But in the movie, yeah.
It's a theme in the movie. So this movie, now what he did do also from a technical aspect is the structure is very complicated.
Well, that's the thing that Nolan made this movie complicated. There's basically three timelines in this movie. I'm saying this both as I believe I understand, because you get a little title at the beginning, and it says,
and though,
this
by the
is
way,
noon,
by the
and
way,
this is three, and this is five, or
by the way,
like
those
that.
Titles don't, no, it says 1 week.
Okay, yeah.
1 day.
Yeah.
1 hour.
Oh, okay.
Figure that out, asshole.
Well, you do eventually piece it together, but it is also like a movie where you feel like these things are all happening contemporaneously at the same time.
They're
and
not.
And then you realize that they're not.
Because
and there's a point in the movie that I figured that out.
Yes. Well, because events keep happening, you'll see it from a different vantage point.
Yes.
You'll see the same thing happen from the other perspective.
Yeah, and there's many times that happens.
Multiple looping. There are three distinct separate, maybe four.
It was Air, Land, and Sea, wasn't it?
I think,
Was that what they were titled?
Well, there's actually maybe four different perspectives, I think.
Right, but I think there were three titled things.
Sure.
In the open.
Because you've got Tom Hardy being the fighter pilot.
Yes.
Then you've got Mark Rylance as
the boat. That's the
sea. As the old man and his son and the neighbor boy.
And the land is that soldier.
Yeah. And but there's a third timeline because there's also Kenneth Branagh. So is that...
He sort of is the wraparound.
Yeah, I know. But they're kind of on their own schedule.
He's the...
Kenneth Branagh is an admiral that's trying to coordinate... Everybody getting
evacuation.
Off. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean,
you know what I mean? They're almost on their own. They're
on
their
own. I think
there's
a point, and I think it was a shot. Again, I don't want to spoil this and get too deep because we haven't talked about this movie at all until just now. It's and again, I don't have the list of the actors in front of me. The Scarecrow guy. The guy who played Scarecrow in Batman.
Cillian Murphy.
There's the scene where you see Cillian Murphy, and then you see another scene where there's like a flashback of Cillian Murphy, and then you go, oh, I get it now. It's daytime. How is it daytime? Like, part of me was like, why is it daytime and nighttime at the same time? Oh, okay, now
like
I get
you'll,
it.
You'll
and
see.
So that happens.
You'll see, like, a fighter get shot down or a boat blow up, and then you'll see it again from another angle, from a different perspective.
Then you'll see the guys on the boat.
But then it takes you a minute to figure out that's you're seeing the time.
It all makes
structure.
Sense in the end.
It does seem like it's on the same timeline for about a good 40 minutes.
Yes.
And then you start realizing that it's looping.
And then it all kind of converges at the end.
Yes.
But anyway, and that wasn't like super confusing.
Now,
it wasn't Inception.
It's going to confuse some people. Believe me.
Yeah, okay.
Now, you and I, though, are conversant in film language.
Yes.
When I talk about not caring about the technical aspects, I do care about the technical aspects of filmmaking and narrative construction and plot and pacing and all of those details. I just don't care about what camera you used as much. So on that aspect, that is well done.
Yeah.
But it does feel like Tom Hardy sinks the same. You do see him like shoot the same fighter down like three times.
I'm not sure how many fighters.
Which is not a spoiler.
No, but
you do lose track because Tom Hardy's up in a Spitfire with a mask on his face, muffled, speaking like Bane.
I think this is not as good a movie. And someone will cut all of this together in order
eventually, in a chronological cut.
And everyone's going to go, what a better movie. Boy, this is so much better that this is all in order. Wow, this is so neat that this is all in order.
Well, there are people that cannot wrap their heads around.
Yes, I know.
So the structure of this movie works, I think, in its favor in that you get a sense that this is bigger than one person.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Right, it was a group.
The whole, you get the scale of this man because they say there's 400,000 men on the beach, and they're kind of trapped on the beach waiting. The forces are holding back the Germans while they try to escape, but they're getting shot, you know, they're getting raided by planes. And so you get a little scope of that in that the way that the structurally, because things don't happen in one clear order. We don't follow one guy through the whole thing.
Yeah, this would be a very straightforward by the numbers movie to shoot to have this all play out in order in sequence.
Yeah, and it
would even have those disparate stories all kind of click together.
And it wouldn't
be
half as interesting a movie if it was cut it in a narrative.
Yeah. It was nice to get lost for 2 or 3 or 4 minutes and then go, now we're caught up. You know what I mean? There was a thing there that worked for me. Of, you know, so there's this boat, and then why is that boat sinking? Why do we care about this
boat?
Who's on
that
boat?
That structure,
oh, here's the guys getting on that boat.
That structure will completely baffle and confound some people.
I mean, I think by the end, it's okay. And I think it's one of those things, too, and maybe he does it because, you know, maybe this movie is interesting to watch again where it wouldn't be. You know, maybe you go like a second viewing of Dunkirk. I could sit through that again because on a second viewing, you know, and that's sort of like your Reservoir Dogs, your Pulp Fiction kind of works that way about, oh, now I see things that I didn't see the first time.
Yeah, but the difference about Pulp Fiction is that each individual scene is interesting or fun. Something
fun is not.
Okay, you can't
compare the movies.
I'm just saying though, each individual scene in Pulp Fiction, the structure is additional fun in Pulp Fiction.
Okay, yeah. I mean,
the structure is almost kind of the story.
Yeah.
In that, if you took these scenes and put them in chronological order, I wonder if it would play out.
Well, it actually is the Saving Private Ryan thing in the sense that nobody saw all of this stuff. Everything that we saw as the viewer could not have possibly be seen by one person. And that's the thing about Saving Private Ryan, where Matt Damon is the old man at the end, and you're like, well, Matt Damon didn't see any of this stuff. Whose memory are we watching?
Uh-huh.
Tom Hanks is dead. What are we doing? You know.
So, well, at least okay. Everybody now. This giving you multiple viewpoints.
So at least Nolan handled that element.
Giving it multiple viewpoints does mean that you are getting a wider scope. That is a good structure. Yeah. The way they did the movie. I do think though it's a little cold and remote in some regards.
Yeah.
Towards the end, it builds towards more of an emotional climax.
Yeah, it has heart.
When you know Tom Hardy wins the war on his own, but. Yeah. It has heart, but not. It's not like a Spielberg would have done this differently.
Well, he would have had a big fan. I mean, there's no ending text. There's no photos of the real life guys like you see in every historical
which was
great to not have that.
Which was a night. There's no. In fact, they don't even do any of the historical context.
Right. Hacksaw Ridge, which was very good, by the way, Hacksaw Ridge. Did all of that. It did every historical war movie cliche by the numbers. And it just felt long, and it just kind of felt unnecessary. And this movie felt like, we're going to give you the best part of this, the stuff you really care about, and we're not going to tug at your heartstrings. And we're not going to, you know, there's no shot of a guy looking at his wallet at the pictures of his kids back home. There's not one of those things. You know? And that's great.
Right.
And that's great. Because those guys were just trying to survive. And you add those things in because they're movie things. You know, it's funny because you say that and you go, well, those are movie things. You know, I mean, your complaint about it is the Hollywoodization of these things, which Nolan has stripped away and made less of those. And then you're saying, well, you miss them, which is okay.
No, okay, by the end, it does get to a little bit of more Hollywood-y.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The tone changes a little bit, and there's a little bit more sort of celebratory kind of feel to it. And then maybe the last 15 minutes, it gets more traditional.
Yeah.
It's not very traditional.
No, it's
or
not. And it's
avant-garde almost, and it's almost a...
I don't know if we should stand up and applaud.
Yeah.
For getting us out of there in less than 2 hours.
That I'll give
come
a...
On.
Yeah, that's
come
a
on.
I'll give that one.
You make a World War II, which the Thin Red Line is like 3 hours and 15 minutes and shit. This was very respectful of our time. It just gave you the good stuff that you wanted to
this
see.
This kind of reminded me, actually,
it's good.
In the number of perspectives and the number of cutting back. And now, that movie has every star.
Oh,
in the
Thin Red Line?
No, Bridge Too Far.
Bridge Too Far. Yeah, a little bit, sure, yeah.
But now, Bridge Too Far has got, like, Robert Redford and Sean Connery and, like, a bunch of guys. Yeah. But it also tells the whole same story from... multiple angles and perspectives.
It's a little bit of a throwback. It's a little bit of a throwback
to
Bridge on the River Kwai and
same with The Longest Day.
Yeah, yeah.
The Longest Day seems to head in one direction, but But it is all, not to mention Harry Styles.
It is a little bit of a throwback movie, and I like
this. This is a very good movie. It's not going to be... I was interested and entertained the whole time, and there's a sustained sense of dread.
Mm-hmm.
And they aren't real... They don't kill everybody off, but there's nobody in this that you feel is untouchable.
Yeah, I mean, it's not... Yeah, I mean, I think...
Because the star... has a mask on his whole time.
There's multiple.
The Tom Hardy stuff kind of bothered me a
little
bit.
Yeah, Tom Hardy's the biggest name.
He is the biggest star, and it kind of bugged me that he loves doing that.
Yeah.
He did a whole movie where he was in a car driving.
Yeah.
Called Lock, where it's just him on the phone to people the whole time. Anyway.
But Dunkirk's good. Go see it. It's getting, you know, I mean, I'm not saying every single person's going to love it. I don't think this is a great date movie or anything like that. It's not... fun in the sense of what a fun night at the movies is, but as we'll talk about, you know, I think when we talk about Spider-Man, we said, you know, Spider-Man is so much fun. It's Clark Griswold saying,
"I know
we're gonna
have
so much fucking fun."
I know. I can never be pleased. Here's an adult realistic war film that treats the subject matter with reverence and you know, doesn't phony up a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. You don't even really see a German.
Yeah, you like, do, but you know, there's no enemy. There's no guy.
You never.
Trying,
there's never
there's no
like
villain.
There's
yeah.
never like Ralph Fiennes in a Nazi uniform. No, you never cut to like the other side, which you know, maybe that would have been a different movie if they did it
that
way.
Well, that's Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah. Or where you try to, you know, you have the other perspective. But anyway, it's a very good film.
It's a good movie.
I can't say it's not a good film. I just think there were a couple things that went.
All right, well, let's talk about...
But otherwise, it's good.
Let's talk about the real war that we care about this summer, and that is the war for the Planet of the Apes.
Sure.
I feel bad because 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, whenever it came out, I did the whole Apes cast, and I think we reviewed pretty much the whole series of Planet of the Apes in a big spectacular, and I don't know if there's less interest in that series now where people have seen... And I think part of my review of War of the Planet of the Apes is that we've seen, oh my God, these effects are so good, these apes look like... fucking they're real and they're having this giant war and there's a million of them at the same time, and that was also great in the second movie, which by the way, the naming of the new Planet of the Apes is wrong. By the way, the Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is the second movie and the Rise is the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
When instead shouldn't the Dawn be the first movie and then the Rise be the second movie?
Yes.
And then the War be the third, but they're opposite.
They're all just Planet
of the
Apes. But they
they're all just
they should just call these movies Planet of the Apes and not even bother with the subtitles.
Well, I always said that about X-Men.
Yeah.
Just call it X-Men, call it Wolverine. That's it. It's Wolverine.
New X-Men.
Wolverine, here's Wolverine.
Remember the last Wolverine. X-Men? Yeah.
Fast and Furious. It's just Fast and Furious.
There's a great line on just Master of None where they say, of the 8 X-Men movies I've seen, that was like the fourth best.
Well, you know, that might be my... We're gonna get to that in a second. But Planet of the Apes, it's very well done. I think if you like the other Planet of the Apes movies, the modern ones anyway, you'll like this one. There is a new ape, which I won't ruin for anyone. But I think the new ape adds a lot to it. And I think talking to you on the phone, one of your complaints about the apes, the new ape movies compared to the old ones, is addressed by the new ape character in this movie. But again, no spoilers. I don't want to ruin it for you. I'm sure you'll see it eventually, so... it's very well done. It is a war. It is another one of those. In fact, this feels like a throwback too, in that this feels like the Dirty Dozen. It feels a little bit like the Great Escape because there's a prison element to it. The apes are clearly 100% the good guys in this. Whereas in the last movie, the humans were the good guys, and then some of the apes were bad, some of the apes were good. And there are good ape, bad apes in this, but it's only the apes that side.
They should have called it good ape, bad ape.
Well, that's part... I don't want to spoil anything.
Right.
That's in there, too.
Now,
so,
as a big fan of the old school Planet of the Apes, I don't really care for these.
Okay, well, that's fine.
And I've seen them... You know, I saw the first two.
Yeah.
So I know the tone of this series. Yeah. I feel we're probably in for more. They're not radically changing the tone.
Yeah, I guess.
For me, they're a little too grim.
Okay.
They're a little too serious and dire... And it's apes crying and, you know, hugging each other.
Yeah.
And it's like, I liked the old sci-fi campy satirical edge. The old Planet of the Apes, and you rewatch those, all have a satirical edge. They're dark kind of movies.
Some of them are. Well, the problem with the old Planet of the Apes is that there is a tone of that first movie. which you love, and I know that you love that.
The first movie's
the second movie doesn't have that tone. The third movie doesn't have that tone. The fourth movie doesn't have that tone. Fifth doesn't have the tone. The fifth movie doesn't have the tone of the fourth movie, and the third movie doesn't have the tone of the second movie, and the fifth. So they're all over the place. We love that first Planet of the Apes because it's a great movie. And then the other ones have things that are great about them, but that tone is there. It's all over the place.
The second one is the wackiest, and I kind of love for it being wacky.
Yeah.
But
I mean, look, there's things about those to love, and I agree that the first movie was in its time, the landmark science fiction. I mean, it is still in top 10 science fiction movies of all time, that first Planet of the Apes. But this series is consistent. And it is, I mean, the first movie was more optimistic than the last two, I think. And I think this one, I think the second one, like most trilogies, the middle is the darkest, most nihilistic one. And so this third one, especially by the ending, does brighten it up a little bit. And they definitely set up, and one thing, without spoiling it, there is a lot of, now the director, is Matt Reeves, has said, I know what you're thinking. This is not trying to be the direct prequel to Planet of the Apes 1968. Meaning that, because there is, at the end of this, you could say, all right, so the spaceman's going to land in the next one. But he's saying that that's not the case. So, but you're moving towards that, at least structurally, in where the story's going. But it's really good. Effects are just amazing.
I miss the pants.
Woody Harrelson's real good as a villain. In this, he's the human villain in this that is very Apocalypse Now. There's a lot of that, too. We're going to travel somewhere to kill this bad guy. That's part of the plot here. So there's a lot of throwback movie references in here. I think if you like the other two, you'll like this one. I thought Dunkirk was probably a better movie, but thumbs up enthusiastically for both of these. After I skipped Guardians and Wonder Woman and everything else up until now. I saw Baby Driver, which was okay. I know.
Yeah,
you
see, I love Baby Driver. Yeah,
I like Dunkirk and War of the Planet of the Apes both better than Baby Driver. So, if you want to see something, I think either of those are good. It's probably not for girls.
What about the Beguiled? Did you see that?
I didn't see that. But we're on to Spider-Man if you want. You ready? Strapped in.
Speaking of something you should not see, just a brief moment on the house.
Very brief. Very brief.
The house. I was not prepared for how bad the house was.
Yes.
And there's a bunch of raunchy comedies that are out this year.
Yeah.
There was Bad Night, which was the female hangover.
Yeah.
Then there's Girls Trip.
Yes.
Which
it's the black girls hangover.
Which, as you said, on the poster, kind of looks like Girls Strip.
Girls Strip, yeah. There's a joke in the title.
Yeah. Can we? Why are comedies so bad?
Yeah.
And the house has every reason to be good.
Yeah.
They took maybe this is, you know what? Maybe this is another shot in the war between stand-ups and improv. Well. Because improv people can kiss my ass. Look, they took every top improv guy in the world is in this movie.
They're all in this.
Right? Every UCB slapnut, the founders of UCB, Amy Poehler and Matt Reeves. Matt, what's his name?
You would know better than me.
Yeah. They're all in there. Nick Kroll is in here.
Well, that's
Michaela
Amy's,
Watkins.
That's Amy's boy toy.
Rob Hubel. Yeah. Cedric Yarbrough. All of those improv people. And they can't come up with shit?
Yeah.
I mean, like, there's a funny line once.
What's the plot of the house?
The plot of the house is Will Ferrell and Amy Poehler's daughter wants to go to college, and she's going to get a scholarship from their town. Mm-hmm. But then Nick Kroll, as the city manager, decides he'd rather build a pool because it'll get him reelected.
Okay.
And kills their scholarship.
Yeah.
So they have to raise the money, and Jason Mantzoukas, as his wild and crazy college roommate who lives next door or lives nearby, says, what if we turn my house into a casino? Because my wife's leaving me and I need to make money to earn her back.
God.
So they build a illicit casino. And now, there's
this
a
sounds like a bad, like, Neighbors movie.
It's supposed to be like that. And you know what? There's a premise there that could work in that they're like the suburban casino and stuff.
Sure.
Except the people act like complete psychotics. Mm-hmm. From the moment they, Like, there's no gradual build to, like, oh, wow, this is getting out of control. Mm-hmm. It's out of control from the second they open the doors of the casino. People are fist fighting and betting money on girls fighting. And, you know, people are taking their clothes off and doing coke. Like, they just lose their minds completely. Mm-hmm. There's no tone, no texture. It's bad.
Yeah.
It's just really, you got an 18% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, it looks terrible.
It's not
It seems
good.
Like they buried it, and I don't even know that these actors did a lot of press for it or anything.
They must have known it stunk.
I think they knew.
And but this is also where you can clearly see they let them improv.
Yeah.
And they just let Will Ferrell do takes and shit. They're like literally, they cut a guy's finger off at one point, and you're like, this is a comedy, and there's blood spurting all over, and you're like, like, what are we, is this, I don't know. It's not, like, Bass-O-Matic. It's really, oh, it's horrible. Just don't go see
it. Yeah, I think most people have already not seen The House. And
You'll see The House when it comes on HBO.
Yes.
Keep clicking. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It'll come on cable or it'll be on Netflix.
You know the guy at work who you have no opinion on him and his taste in movies? He's going to come in one day and he's going to go, I saw that movie, The House, man. That wasn't that bad. I don't know what people were mad about, man. That came out.
I was funny. I laughed. It's awful.
Yeah, exactly.
Just awful.
Yeah, that's what's going to happen. All right. Spider-Man Homecoming came out.
There's
a little bit of that.
They play that in the beginning, yeah.
I went. Here's a confession on me, and maybe something you're not. I have not seen until I went to Spider-Man Homecoming the other day. A theatrical Spider-Man motion picture in any format, in any venue.
You hadn't seen any of the other
Spider-Man? They've made five. This is the sixth Spider-Man theatrical film. I've seen one of them, and that was the most recent one. So suck on that.
You never saw...
I never saw any of the Sam Raimi Spider-Man? And I never saw the other ones that came out a couple years ago.
Now, here's where the world has gone fucking cuckoo.
Yeah.
The Sam Raimi... original Spider-Man, what was 2003 to 89%.
Yeah, people like those.
Spider-Man Homecoming, 92%.
They did.
Millennials, go please die. They're wrong. They're 1,000% wrong. The Sam Raimi ones are vastly superior.
To the, what, the Incredible Spider-Mans? Or
well, there was the Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Those are the Amazing Spider-Man.
The lowest rated Spider-Man of all the Spider-Mans.
Would be 3, right?
Is Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Oh, okay, Amazing Spider-Man.
Which was bad.
Which, well, why they never made Amazing
which,
Spider-Man.
Well, because, okay, here's the, so not to get, this is as convoluted as Dunkirk.
Yes.
This is hard to follow the timeline. Back in the 80s, Marvel couldn't get any of their movies made. Mm-hmm. DC had Batman and Superman and had big success with the Michael Keaton Batman. And Marvel was desperate to get their properties made. They'd had the Hulk TV show, but not a lot of success. So they just started willy-nilly, and they were also getting bought out and traded by corporate raiders and Carl Icahn and the guy from Revlon, whatever, bought. And so Marvel was kind of floating in the weeds in the 90s, and James Cameron was supposed to make a Spider-Man movie, and that never happened. Mm-hmm. So they sold the rights out to their properties to a couple. They sold Spider-Man, the Fantastic Four, and the X-Men to Fox, and Sony and Columbia got Spider-Man. That was before there was a Marvel Studios, before Iron Man, before they made a hit out of anything. And so the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies were big, huge hits. Great. Mm. Then they fired Sam Raimi after the third one, which was still a big hit, but mm-hmm. some people had problems with. And I think it's about half a good movie, and then the end falls apart.
Okay.
So now Marvel doesn't control Spider-Man, and Sony makes these Andrew Garfield ones. Mm-hmm. The first one... passable.
Yeah.
The second one, a disaster from a creative perspective, because the studio clearly did the dictation on this. And they said, how about three villains? How about we slap this in? Mm-hmm. How about we have the Green Goblin? And it was a mess. So now Marvel goes, well, what if we cut the profits on and let us use Spider-Man and we'll make it and we'll fold him into this wildly successful Marvel universe. Mm-hmm. And Sony said, okay, cool, we'll take the cut.
We'll produce it, you release it, and you guys will split the money. And
yeah. Seemed to have worked out for them, and it's been a big, successful film. But,
yeah.
In doing that,
yes.
In weaving, and I stand as, okay, come at me, bros.
Yeah.
Come at me now, everybody on the webs. All the people younger than us, come at me,
nerds.
I saw my okay, but for me, I have a Spider-Man coffee mug over
here. Yeah.
I saw my Spider-Man.
Yeah.
The Tobey Maguire, Kirsten Dunst Spider-Man worked for me.
Mm-hmm.
Those movies aren't perfect.
Not my Spider-Man.
This is hashtag not my Spider-Man. These are, okay, but like, those were, okay, I like those movies. I think they're
right.
good.
Yeah.
And they capture the essence of the character, and they satisfied me, and particularly Spider-Man 2 was
yeah.
great. So I'm good.
Yeah.
I saw Spider-Man
sure.
as a movie.
Right.
And they did it well. Mm-hmm. Also, because it was not part of the Marvel Universe,
yeah.
he got to exist as his own.
Well, that's the biggest problem.
The number one problem
yeah.
with Spider-Man Homecoming
yep.
is that, well, there's two problems. One, we talk about the DC movies not being fun.
Yeah.
And Justice League seems to be trying to correct that a little bit. Yeah. There were some attempts at jokes in that trailer.
Okay.
I think it looked like poop because I
yeah.
still don't like the designs they went with. But this is like burying you with whimsy.
Oh my god!
Right? It's like you so.
Well, it's the Disney theme park ride.
Yes,
that's what it is. It's not trying to be anything else.
It is
it's
High School
exactly
Musical:
yes.
The Spider-Man.
Well, the high school stuff. I've seen criticism of the high school stuff.
I hated the high school stuff.
I mean, he's in high school. If you're making a Spider-Man origin story, he's going to be in high school. I mean,
this isn't even an origin story, though, really.
Well, the origin story, yeah, they really didn't do the origin story, because even in, like, Captain America Civil War, there's a little bit of there's more origin in that than, I don't know.
Well, but yeah. the whole thing, Spider-Man doesn't get to breathe and live as his own.
Yes.
He's mm-hmm. now a ancillary portion of the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
This really feels almost like an Iron Man movie.
Yeah.
To some degree.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Iron Man 4.
Yeah.
Robert Downey Jr. is in a good chunk of it.
Yes.
John Favreau's in it.
Yeah.
As Happy Hogan, who's his driver and
mm-hmm.
aide.
Yeah.
And it really kind of feels like an Iron Man movie with Spider-Man tacked in there.
Well,
or Spider-Man is a sidekick to Iron Man. Or it's really...
It is Marvel Universe Summer 2017. That should have been the title of this.
Yes.
That should have been the title. Marvel Summer 2017.
We are filling...
I mean, I guess you could say that's Guardians of the Galaxy, too.
We're filling a slot on the calendar.
Now, it's funny because, again, it is not even Marvel... I mean, I guess this is MCU, but it's also not Marvel Disney. You know, it is also... But it's just... It's so much to where... And I sent you this video where a guy broke down everybody. According to him, and again, I saw... See, here for me, I don't know the whole thing about... I don't see all the Marvel movies. I see some of them. Some of them I see, some of them I don't. I didn't know that every single kid in that high school class... By the way, the only people you ever meet in high school class are the people that are on his team.
Yes.
Which is completely weird that they don't have anything else. But anyway, all of them apparently are either superheroes or some character that will be later in the Marvel Universe. In some kind
to
of way.
To some degree.
Now,
yes.
I didn't know that, but as you go through this movie, everything is a reference to where, when they're walking down the street, every sign behind him, every name of every building, every license plate, every single thing in this movie, there's not one thing
I'm gonna
that
go,
isn't a reference.
Did they mention
movie.
In this video how, all right, there's a one spot where Spider-Man's rescuing somebody, and there's a hot dog cart vendor.
Yes, the hot
the
dog
guy
cart
says,
vendor is in there, yes.
Do a flip.
Yes.
Well, there's a guy standing next to him that
yes,
goes, woo!
That guy's in the
Get
thing,
him,
yes.
Spider-Man.
Yes.
And you know who that guy is?
He's an asshole. He's a guy from Marvel. He's got 87 comic books made about him.
The actor
yes.
played the punk that Spock puts to sleep
yes,
on the
that's,
bus.
That's in there
in,
too, yeah.
in
that's,
Star
that's,
Trek 4.
Yeah, but it's just like
it's
a million.
Like, who
yeah,
cares,
exactly.
nerds?
It's a million.
I have a shelf, Joel.
But here's the thing.
I have a shelf
okay.
that's just like Ultraman and Gamera okay. movies. I have a shelf on my. I'm as big as I bleed. I'm wearing a fucking Batman
You're
shirt.
You're wearing a Batman
I
shirt.
I bleed nerd jism.
Yes, I'm wearing a Kazunori Shibata t-shirt right now. So I'm
You're wearing a wrestling mark shirt.
I'm wearing
okay,
a,
yeah, yeah.
A New Japan Pro Wrestling
yeah,
shirt.
Sure. But you're a nerd for different things.
Katsuyori Shibata.
Yeah.
Pronounce his name right, Joel.
I'm nerded out.
Yeah.
because this doesn't give it any room to, like I'm saying,
but
it doesn't give it any room to breathe.
But when I'm watching it, I don't know who that guy is, but I know that the way they held the camera on him for just an extra second means that it's something you're supposed to know or you're supposed to get, and it's just exhausting. It's exhausting. There's a million cuts in this movie, and every single one is a cut to a different, you know, this is framed just like the panel of this Spider-Man comic from blah, 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 blah. And it's like, this guy is the great, you know, the one guy, the black guy.
Bokeem Woodbine.
Is the grandson of a guy from the first Captain America movie who was the same actor. And there's a picture of the grandfather behind him in the office that the camera, that is perfectly in focus, that the camera lingers on for just a second, and you're supposed to go in your head, who the fuck is this guy? Oh, he was in a Captain America movie that came out 10 years ago that we don't fucking, I don't even remember, but I'm supposed to know who fucking that guy is.
This is ridiculous.
The whole thing's ridiculous.
This is the tech nerd quote for this.
The whole thing's ridiculous.
Okay.
It's too much. It's too much of that. The point of a superhero is a superhero lives in a world full of ordinary people. And how they interact in that world with ordinary people is the conflict at some root level. And this movie, everybody's a superhero. Everybody's part of this. Superheroes aren't new to anyone. Mm-hmm. It's just a thing. And that's why when I see something like Logan or Watchmen or even like Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight movies, those things exist. People see Batman and it's fucking weird. Who is this guy? I'm afraid of this guy. That's what it needs to be. This Spider-Man is just, it's just, there's no danger. You never worry about him. You never worry about his relationship with his aunt or how he's doing in school or if the girl likes him. You don't worry about jack fucking shit. Nothing matters.
It's all played for a goof.
It's just, now, here's a parade of Marvel images. Now you talk.
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely, and I'm gonna go back to the Bokeem Woodbine character.
Okay.
How many, Joel, African American gentlemen do you know named Herman Schultz? literally Bokeem
Woodbine.
He was
on the Portland Trailblazers, wasn't he?
But that's literally the name of the character.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
That Bokeem Woodbine is playing. Yeah.
But I mean, like, who?
What are you talking? Like what? What are we even doing?
We're masturbating. It feels good to masturbate.
I'm talking about this is going to get into another.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the person who turned off the, when we were talking about tits, you'll be equally offended when I get
into
this.
I don't think anyone's listening anymore to this.
You're right. They're done.
I think they're all gone.
All right. Here's what I found offensive. Here's what I found about offensive about this movie.
Yeah.
And I say this as a diehard progressive. Mm-hmm. The United Colors of Benetton High School.
Well, yeah.
It is to the point now. But that did not, nothing about that felt organic.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, there's characters in the comic books.
Yeah.
Like the Donald Glover.
Yeah.
Always a black guy.
Yeah, sure.
The Prowler was a black guy. That's always been. Didn't change that character. They took Bokeem Woodbine and gave him the name Herman Schultz.
Yeah, right.
There's another guy in this movie the character's name is Mac Gargan.
Right.
When I say Mac Gargan to you.
Yes.
What does that sound? What ethnicity
Mac
is that?
Mac Gargan sounds Germanic, tall, or Nordic or something.
Mac Gargan.
Mac.
Irish.
Oh, Mac Gargan. Okay,
Mac Gargan.
Yeah.
His name is two names, yeah, Mac Gargan. It's an Irishman,
yeah,
right?
Okay, Irish.
Played by a Mexican in this movie.
Yeah, well, it's
okay, it's not that. It's that we're so concerned about creating fairness and creating multi-ethnicities and diversity that we've lost our fucking minds about do you know what I mean? And it only goes in one direction.
Yeah.
If there was a white guy in this movie and his name was Hassan Abdul,
yeah,
we'd all lose our minds.
Yeah.
But a black guy named Herman Schultz, we all go, well, that must obviously be his name, except that that's not the name of one fucking African-American on Earth.
I mean, that's another problem you can have with this, and that's probably with a
lot
of pop culture.
Okay, but that's not, I'm not nuts about that.
No, I mean.
What we're not nuts about is, it's not that I'm opposed, okay. Zendaya, by the way, can go piss up a rope.
Well.
That girl does, I don't think she's attractive, talented, interesting.
Well, Zendaya was the nerd girl, though.
Yes.
Not the love interest.
No.
The love interest is another girl that's,
she plays, okay, spoilers, but whatever.
There's two girls that are kind of black.
Yeah, okay.
One of them is supposed to be pretty,
right.
The other one's not. They look almost exactly alike, except
okay,
for
the one girl's,
one's hair is messed up.
The girl named Liz, now in the original comic books, in the original comic books going back to the 60s, when we did have a segregated, oppressive society, there was the pretty girl in school was named Liz.
Yeah, okay.
Alan. Yeah. This is Liz Toombs.
Okay,
it's a different, I got to remember all the names from this movie. So, not the same Liz. Mm-hmm. Kind of a reference to it. Now, in the comic books originally, Peter went to a regular high school.
Mm-hmm.
This is a academy, like a, you know, New York City has academies.
Sure, yeah.
This is like a science academy high school. So everybody he goes to high school with is a nerd.
Yeah.
In the original comic books, Peter was a working class guy who was being raised by his poor aunt and uncle after his parents were killed.
Yeah.
And he lived in Queens. And went to a shitty regular high school. And even in the Sam Raimi ones, he goes to a regular high school. He's a nerd. He's smarter than everybody. So he doesn't really have a lot of friends. This kid's hip deep in friends. Chicks are into him.
Yeah.
He gets bullied by a kid who couldn't bully a chihuahua.
He's like an 87-pound, 5-foot-2, brown.
Come at me, internet. I fucking hate that kid.
Yeah.
The casting of that kid.
Right.
The actor who played the kid.
Right.
What they did to the character, because the character Flash Thompson is the football star jock.
Yeah, he in here he's just like the mean kid.
It's the worst. Yeah. They fucked their own characters up beyond any recognition. They gave him a fat sidekick buddy.
But he's based on a comic book character.
Yeah, it doesn't look anything or even remotely any way resemble.
No, he's based on a character in
Ned Leeds, yes.
From the when Morales is Spider-Man. That's his book.
Oh, he's from the other.
Yes, he's from the other Spider-Man.
So he's from the ultimate.
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
I see.
That's what he's
So what they're doing is they're fusing the ultimate continuity, which is what they came up with.
Well, he's named after the guy in the original Spider-Man, but he looks like the
Like the kid from the ultimate.
Yeah,
looks,
that's
what
I learned from this YouTube video.
All right. So there's
some of
that.
I didn't waste 2 hours and 20 fucking goddamn minutes of my life watching this movie. I then watched 30-minute YouTube videos.
I found this Spider-Man to be death by mirth.
Yeah.
As our friend Scott Parrish brought up when I talked to him about this, they give him a suit.
Yeah.
They give Tony Stark gives him his spider suit.
Yeah.
And it's got a voice. Now they what they basically did was Iron Man.
Yeah, no.
In Iron Man, he talks to his computer, Jarvis.
Well, let me ask you this.
And in this, they give him a suit that he can talk to.
Yeah.
And you know why they do that? So he has someone to talk to.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's only so that he has some dialogue.
Wait. The Spider-Man in the past, I know there was some debate, and I don't know where the movies went on this, but it was the organic or inorganic webs.
Yes.
And these are inorganic. This is like Tony Stark.
These are web shooters.
Web shooters, yes. How have the movies dealt with this in the past?
The Sam Raimi ones had the organic web shooters.
Okay.
And in some versions of the comic, sometimes he has organic web shooters.
Yeah.
I got used to the organic web shooters.
Yeah.
The whole gimmick was, never mind.
Radioactive spider bites you, you become a spider.
It made more sense. Okay, so in the Raimi interpretation of it, he ends up getting DNA. It's not that it's radioactive. It's that it's he gets the it's a genetically engineered spider, and the radiation gives him the genetic code, whatever.
Yeah.
They had a more pseudoscience bullshit explanation. Yeah. But in the way they did it, the gene transfer thing, he got all of the spider's ability, including the shooting webs.
Yeah.
In the original comic books, he doesn't get the web, so he builds his own web shooter.
He builds a web shooter.
And and by the way, the web fluid thing, all that really does is give them an excuse that once in a while he runs out of webs.
Yes. He has to go back to his stash.
It's just a storytelling gimmick.
There's some good stuff. Michael Keaton is good when they give him something to do.
Michael Keaton is good in every okay, Michael Keaton is oftentimes in bad movies, but he's never bad.
But I mean, he's good in this when he's doing something.
Yeah.
I mean, there is one particular scene where Michael Keaton really gets to act, and he's good in it. And yes. that was probably the best scene in the movie.
The whether it's a one-on-one scene.
Yeah, it's a
one-on-one.
Yeah, and it's that's the best scene in the movie. Yeah, yeah. I don't want to spoil anything, but it's the best scene in the movie. Michael Keaton's good. Otherwise, anyone could have done this. I thought the kid Tom Holland was fine, but again, he you know, whatever.
It's such a twerpy.
It doesn't do anything.
It's a, I don't care about a twerpy 15-year-old Spider-Man. God, do I hate this movie. More I think about it.
You know what? Maybe you hate it more than I do because you expected something out of it.
Michael Keaton, I did like his character, and they at least gave his character something resembling a motivation.
Yeah, yeah.
And he had a code
right.
that he followed.
Right. Yeah.
So he was a good, decent, interesting villain.
And but then the henchmen.
The henchmen are just straight evil.
But that guy's going to be in other stuff. The Tinker guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's going to be in other movies because he's... Whatever. He's available to be another one.
Yes. That's always been an ancillary character.
Yeah. But, you know, he's here and he can be in other things now. And, yeah, there are other Avengers that show up. There are other people
sure.
from the universe that show up in this. But, yeah, a lot of Iron Man. Again, it does feel like they just kind of went like, hey, it's him. Because it almost feels like some. And the thing is, like, there's really no Spidey sense in this movie.
No.
Even though I guess it's a lot of it is because he has that AI woman that is telling him where things are.
Well, they took away.
He doesn't need to have that.
Now, and this is my nerd complaints, but they take away from Peter Parker because it's all just Stark. Yeah, it's all just Stark tech.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah, it's
thumbs down. You guys who like this are full of crap.
Well,
this is it's an overstuffed gizmo. It's all supposed to be like, look, whiz bang. Look how fun this is.
Yeah.
And it's exhausting.
It's too much fun.
Too much whimsy,
yeah.
too much goofing, too much forced diversity to look like, look how cool we are.
Yeah.
Where they change the characters beyond recognition, right. not in any logical sense.
I think people...
The girl who played Liz was fine. She was cute, and I thought she had a...
Yeah, I mean...
But again, none of the... All the high school stuff was kind of just annoying in that they didn't fully commit to it to, like, make that the core of the story.
It's not a bad movie like Batman versus Superman was in that sense, but it's also... This movie's not going to date well. I think people are already sort of... I know the box office, it really dropped off, even though it had this, like, gigantic opening. It's already dropped off a lot. I think Planet of the Apes beat it in week two, so...
Laura Harrier is her name.
Okay. But it's clearly a movie that people are going to look by and go, boy, they got that wrong, I think.
I hope that people change... I hope that they're as wise as I.
Yeah.
Someday you'll look back and go, Corey was right about stuff.
Well... Yeah,
now
I mean,
you're not
will.
A fan. Okay, but you're not a fan.
I'm not.
So you don't have any of the invested fan
none.
Things that
and
bother
some
me
some of these
about
Marvel
it.
Movies I like. I mean, I liked...
Sure.
Captain America, the first... And
the
then
first
Civil,
Captain America is really fun.
And the second one's all pretty good, and then Civil War was like
well,
too much of that.
You know why? Because it gets they progressively...
Yes.
The first Captain America is his story in his timeline. When they make these the integrated... And this is what fans have always wanted.
I know, they always want them.
The
and
fans
always
want
yeah.
it, but the more involvement in the Marvel Universe they give it, the more it gets kind of bogged down in wonkiness. All right.
Yeah, it's not... I went hoping it was going to be good. Because I heard it was good, and I go, I've never really seen a Spider-Man. I remember Spider-Man, the TV show, and cartoons as a kid. Liked it. Not this one. Let's wrap this up.
The Sam Raimi Spider-Man stand tall as still being good.
I will continue to not see
those. All right.
Let's wrap it up. Thank you for listening to Joel Radio, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the movie wrap-up here today. I think if I'm ranking things, Dunkirk, Planet of the Apes, Baby Driver, because the other summer I saw, Spider-Man's at the bottom. And now the Spider-Man is like... You know, I mean, Spider-Man is a C-plus for me, if I'm giving it a letter grade. It's just not, you know, it's not...
Yeah, I'm a little hard on
it. It's not like
it.
An F.
No,
it's not like the worst movie I've ever seen.
Oh, Batman versus Superman was way worse.
Yeah, Batman
versus Superman. Suicide Squad was way worse.
I see, I didn't even bother with that one.
But it's not that...
It's just not as good as it could be. Well, I gotta go.
All right,
Corey,
I gotta go
thank you for hosting the show. Hope you enjoyed Dunkirk. You owe me $9.
Was it $9 for the 70
like
millimeter?
Oh, jeez. Because I bought them online. We didn't have to wait in that line. There was a.
Now, in the old days, I would have just bought you a White Castle.
Well, that's those days are over.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Joel Radio. We'll catch you next time. Enjoy
in-depth review of Captain Underpants next time.
Enjoy some movies. Well, what's Valerian? We need to see that.
Oh, jeez.
That's your homework while I'm at the gathering. Go see Valerian.
Oh, yeah. So you're off to the clowns.
Oh, Jesus Christ. In Oklahoma City. It's going to be 99 degrees every day. Pray for it.
Sounds like a hoot.
Good night. Thank you for listening, everyone.